This is Samuel's Persiflage, episode number 7 for August 2006. To another episode of Samuel's Persiflage. Samuel Gordon Stewart here with you for the month of August. And today we're going to look mostly at a very Canberra-centric issue. It's the 39 school closures proposed in the recent ACT budget. I'll interview a couple people about that. Some very interesting things in all of that. It's a very interesting subject and one that's close to a lot of people's hearts, including my own. We've also got a Persiflage puzzle, there's some feedback, there's a few other things to do as well, so we'll go through that. This is Samuel's Persiflage. Earlier this year, the ACT government handed down a budget which included proposals to close 39 schools. On the list of closures was Canberra's only college in the Inner North, Dixon College. Mike Hettinger is the administrator of the Save Dixon College email list. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Samuel. Pleased to be here.
So, what was your reaction when you heard that Dixon College was going to close?
It was absolute shock and amazement. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that the only college in the Inner North was even being considered for closure. It performed such a vital function in the community. I just couldn't believe that it was even being considered, even in an ambit claim.
Now, you ran for election in, when was it?
2004.
2004. Yeah. So at the last ACT election, you ran for the Labor Party, who are currently the governing party. So being a Labor person, did this change your mind about the people who were in power?
Well, I actually felt that I was running as a Labor candidate on core Labor values. The theme of my campaign was a smarter, greener Canberra. And I believed in that really strongly, not only the campaign, but since. And I feel that in that campaign and since, I've stood for core Labor values. So I actually feel that I'm representing not only voters, but members of the Labor Party who do believe in that, do believe in a strong public education system. I wouldn't assume that because this budget was handed down that everyone in the Labor Party agrees that public education should be cut.
And I think the recent Labor Party conference showed that, because there was a lot of people against the closures.
Oh, definitely. In fact, there was a lot of argument about it, and I think that if the vote had actually taken place before lunch rather than after lunch, I think the vote would have actually gone positively our way.
So, just speaking hypothetically for a moment, if it had gone our way, and that is if people had said we want more time before these closures take place, before any closure can take place, how do you think that would have impacted the government? Do you think that would have actually then been tabled in the Assembly that, yes, we are going to hold off on this?
Well, I think it would have given them an honourable way out, if for lack of a better term. I think that that would have provided a justification to say, look, I think we need to take a good hard look at all of the facts. I think we need to, we need to consult with the community and get them on board first before we make any major decisions. I'm hoping that that's what it would have had them do. I can't guarantee that, but it certainly would have been a strong message in that direction.
Okay. So why do you think, of all the colleges in Canberra, why do you think Dixon College was the one that was chosen?
I still don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I knew. I'm hoping that maybe it's part of an ambit claim that might be drawn back. I think that I couldn't see any rational reason for Dixon to be shut down. I think there was one argument given that there were a lot of students from outside the area, like Gungahlin, and they'd be opening up a college in Gungahlin. But the facts are that there's only a small number of students at Dixon from Gungahlin, so that really is not a justification to shut it down. So again, I'm still absolutely surprised, and I have yet to see a valid reason that could be used to justify shutting it down.
Yeah, one of the reasons that was mentioned was that Dixon College is supposedly under capacity, but I think that was based on data that's not only out of date but also incorrect, because you can't fill up a classroom every moment of every single day.
Well, I think part of the whole problem, and then again, that's the problem with lack of consulting with the community beforehand. If the government had consulted with the community beforehand, they would have been much more likely to come up with numbers that would have been accurate and reflected reality. I mean, the fact that they came out with these numbers and they're quite easily disputed shows that there wasn't much homework done beforehand. And the whole basis behind some of these actions are just unsound.
Mm. And then, of course, there's the fact that there's three colleges in the Belconnen area. None of them are planned to be closed. Yet, quite a few of them are actually under capacity, and quite seriously under capacity.
Yeah. Well, I think in that case, it's about, again, going. Consulting with the community beforehand so that you know exactly what the issues are and what the comparative strengths and weaknesses are of each institution. And it's pretty apparent to me that that hasn't been done.
Hmm. I'll give you my theory about the school closures, and I'll see what your response to it is. When I saw the headline that 39 schools were planned for closure, I just thought, 39 being about a third of the schools in Canberra, it just sounds like a number that's plucked out of thin air. What I thought at the time was the ACT government have maybe a smaller number of schools that they want to close, and they learnt from last year's example I've forgotten the name of the high school in the Belconnen area that they wanted to close. There was a serious public backlash to that. So they thought, we can say we'll close 39 schools, then we'll only close the ones we really want to close, and we'll turn around and say, hey, aren't we wonderful, we're only closing these ones, and all of the rest of you can be very happy.
Mm-hmm. Go on, sorry.
What's your reaction to that?
I wouldn't be surprised if that was part of the strategy. I think that I've seen before where, again, it's an ambit claim. There'll be a claim of a very large number, and then after a consultation process, whatever that may be, the number will be reduced, and there'll be the idea that people will feel reasonably relieved or maybe even happy about it. It's like being hit really hard at first, and then they only hit you slightly, and you feel relieved rather than angry that you got hit in the first place. But I think in this case, I think the strategy's backfiring.
Mm.
I think people are going to retain the anger, for even just the fact that there was the gall to even propose 39 schools to be shut down.
Yeah. Now, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, you're the administrator of the Save Dixon College mailing list, so you've obviously seen quite a lot of mail coming and going about the Dixon College closure in particular. How do you think the public has reacted? You just said that you think the plan has backfired. What do you think the public reaction has been?
Well, I think it's been quite negative. I think it's and it's angry too. And I think what's even more important, it's the sector of the public that's been angered. It's the sector of the public that supports public education. They tend to be consistent labor voters, and they feel they've been betrayed. I think that when you feel that you've been betrayed, I think the anger that you feel is going to be much more intense than if you had been wronged by a group or someone that you actually expected it from.
Mm.
And I think that is probably, you know, the single biggest factor behind the intensity of the anger that I've seen. And it's not just Dixon, it's all across the community.
Yeah. Yes, we're recording this on Thursday night. So today, the Australian Education Union's ACT branch has had one electorate of schools, all public school teachers, have gone on strike, mostly because of a pay claim, but also they've included in the strike the school closures. The teachers aren't happy about it either, because obviously it would lose jobs for them. How do you think the teachers have reacted?
Oh, well, of course, I think they're angry as well. I mean, they're looking at a shrinking of the public education system. I think that what they see is with the closures that their futures are going to be impacted, because obviously with school closures that means that jobs will be going as well. And I think I need to mention that there has been a justification for the closures provided that says, well, we have to close these schools in order to save the public education system. And to me, it's a pretty amazing logic. In other words, they're saying they want to close schools to stem the flow into private schools. And yet, I think that the actions that are being taken could actually accelerate it. And in some ways, the language being used saying we need to cut public education in order to save it is a bit like what we used to hear in the Vietnam War, saying that we had to destroy the village in order to save it.
Hmm.
I think that's exactly what's happening, and I think the teachers see that. They're obviously well-educated, and they know what's going on.
Hmm. And the teachers, of course, being professional teachers, not only are they interested in their own jobs, but they also have a passion for educating our children. So with less schools and more students in larger schools, and probably therefore larger class sizes, they're going to feel the pressure, and they obviously feel they're not going to be able to do their job as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they are passionate about what they want to do, and they want to be able to do a good job. And in some ways, I think they probably feel that that they're probably being taken advantage of precisely because they have that passion. In other words, the idea is that, well, they're going to stay in the job anyway because they love their job, so we can pay them less and we can reduce their conditions.
Hmm. So just to wrap up, because we are sort of running close to time, what can people do if they want to help save the schools?
Well, I think it's a matter of acting strongly locally. If it's about a particular school, certainly join with your PNC council. And if there is a committee such as with Dixon, there's a Save Dixon College committee. Certainly approach the committee and let them know that you're interested. I think that's probably the most important is being able to organize at a grassroots level.
Mm.
And I think obviously there's going to be consultations going on as well. I mean, it'd be good to provide a submission to the process, because every submission counts. I think it is extremely important to make sure that everyone's well organized at a grassroots level, because this is the sort of thing that it's more than just providing a submission. It is really about providing the energy and making the politicians know that the community is really angry, and that this isn't just a passing thing. I think there's an assumption made that this will all blow over in 6 or 7 months, and everyone will forget about it, and they'll just come right back and be nice and happy. Well, if people don't feel that way, they need to make that position known, and they need to sustain it. It's extremely important to be able to sustain your activity, and that goes all the way up to the next election.
Hmm. It's interesting you mention that, because it is 2006 now. The next election isn't until 2008. Timing does seem a little convenient, doesn't it?
Indeed. I think that's part of the strategy.
Hmm. Mike, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome, Samuel. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Now we'll go to Alison Zanetti, who has had two of her children go through Dixon College, and she's hoping another one will go through in 2010. Alison, welcome to the program.
Hello, hi.
So, why are you opposed to the closure of Dixon College?
Well, I think that there, you know, it's going to really limit the options, I guess, for us, rather than increase the options. I think the college system that's here in the ACT is a fantastic system, and from what I've heard in other states, the kids that come out of our college system are considered by, when they go to unis, etc., are considered to be much more mature and much more able to cope with study at the university level because they've been used to operating more at that mature level
I think that's one of the things that a lot of people who are from out of the state, well, out of the territory, and even from out of the country, don't necessarily understand, is that our college system is different to our high school system because the high school is very much a high school. It's very, very rigid, whereas the college is sort of a cross between high school and tertiary education.
That's right, that's right. And children, you know, the kids that go there have to be responsible for a lot of their own learning.
Hmm. So Dixon College is the only college in the Inner North.
That's right.
For your... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, if Dixon was to close, I think that the next closest college for us would be at Ginninderra, which would be an enormous impost on trying to get my child there every day. And from what I understand, that college already is at capacity, so I'm not quite sure where else Nina could, you know, my younger daughter could go to access the college.
Mm. I'd probably suggest it'd probably be Copeland College, but that's even further away. And
Right. That
brings up another subject, because Copeland College is one of three colleges in the Belconnen area, and most of them are under capacity. I mean, Copeland is very low on capacity, on students rather. So you'd think it would make more sense to close one in Belconnen rather than the only one in the Inner North.
Absolutely, absolutely. The, you know, and the suggestion of making Campbell High go from year 7 to 12, I think is a ridiculous suggestion, in that it's one of the reasons the government's put it forward is that it's meant to be offering us choice, but in fact it's absolutely limiting our choices. It's certainly not a system that I want for my child. I think that one of the beauties of the system here in the ACT in breaking up the children from 12 years of age to those who are sort of 17 and 18 is fantastic. You know, the children in year 7. I mean, in many states, like in WA, etc., children don't even go into high school until they are in year 8, the equivalent of year 8 here, because they're considered to be too young. And I think the concept, the idea to bring little 12-year-olds closer to 17 and 18-year-olds is certainly going to make their introduction into high school much, much more difficult.
Mm. I remember in Year 7 it was hard enough having all the Year 9s and Year 10s and even the Year 8s there. That was hard enough, but having Year 11 and 12 would just make it worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. The other thing about the Campbell 7 to 12 proposal is there's really not enough room at Campbell. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, I actually went there just recently when they had their open school night there. And, you know, both my elder children went to Campbell, so I am reasonably familiar with it. And certainly, I mean, they would certainly have to build onto the school. And the grounds, I don't think there's enough room in the grounds there to really provide the sort of setup that you would imagine that year 11 and 12 would need. Parking is a huge issue around that school as well. With the War Memorial ever-growing and CSIRO also just there, I don't think it's a good area at all. I also found that having the Civic within walking distance of the school a really bad thing for a lot of the kids that go to Campbell, because they, in the afternoon, there's with all parents, of course, being at work these days and not having somebody at home to mind them, kids are at a loose end after school and they wander down to Civic, which, you know, I think can put them in all sorts of risks.
Mm. To the same extent, Dixon College is actually closer to the Dixon shops than Campbell High is to the Civic shops, but by the time they're at college, you'd think they'd be more responsible than they are when they're in high school.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Hmm. So, any other thoughts on the proposed closure? Or a message for the government?
Obviously, one of the things about Dixon too is it's just had a huge bit of overhaul there. You know, they've got fantastic setup. I guess I'm concerned. What are they going to do with that? With all the facilities there, if they do close it, I'm not sure what the intention, they think that they might use that building for.
Well, the messages are very mixed there because the government originally said they wouldn't sell off the land, and recently the Chief Minister said that he wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah. You know, I can imagine a whole lot more sort of apartments or something going there, which I really don't think this area needs at all.
No.
And the other thing, of course, is that we're forever trying to sort of encourage more families to move to Canberra. And surely closing down the college is, in the inner north here is certainly not going to help encourage young families to move here.
Hmm. Especially when you consider if they do close down all the 39 schools they've proposed, if they were then to sell off that land and put houses on it, where are all the kids going to go that end up moving into those houses?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's sort of a cutting off their nose to spite their face, is how I feel.
Yeah.
And, I've been a strong Labor voter all my life. If they close Dixon, I will not vote for the Labor Party, and it will be the first time. So, but I couldn't possibly vote for them when I feel that they're sort of being so small-minded and have seemed to have no vision about the real future.
I think it's a message that a lot of Canberra residents are expressing to the government.
Yeah, well, let's hope that they're listening.
Well, we can only hope. Alison, thank you very much for your time.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Samuel's Persiflage.
Well, it's time to have another look at the persiflage puzzle now. As I said, it's a very important measurement. It's probably one of the most important measurements around, actually. So that's a bit of a clue, but we should probably draw a few more letters out for you so that you can have a bit more of a chance of working out what this is. So we'll draw four letters out of the hat this time round. So, let's see, the first letter out is the letter D for dog, and it happens to be the third letter in the second word, so we'll draw another letter out now, and it's the letter B for Bob, and it doesn't look like there are any of those in the puzzle. So, we'll draw out another letter now, and it is the letter K for kite. Can't find any of those in the puzzle either, so we'll put that to one side and try for one more letter, and it's the letter I for India. And the letter I for India is in the puzzle. It's the seventh letter of the first word, so it's beginning to take shape. See if you can work out what it is. Well, we'll put a few more letters into the puzzle very soon.
Samuel's Persiflage listener feedback. Send your emails to podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com.
Yes, that's right. It's time for the Samuel's Persiflage listener feedback, and of course, you can send me written feedback to podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com or spoken feedback to there as well in either MP3 or WAVE or OGVORBIS format. Or probably the easiest way to send audio feedback is to go to the Samuel's Persiflage website and click on the Send Spoken Feedback link, which will take you to another page which will record the feedback for you and send it straight to me. So it's That's probably the easiest way to do it. But let's go through some of the feedback from this month. We'll start with an email from Clayton. Clayton writes, Samuel, thank you for your mention of our correspondence pertaining to the discussion we had about Samuel's persiflage number 5 in Samuel's persiflage number 6. Does Clayton work for the public service by any chance? Because that really sounded like one of their documents. Clayton continues, I would like to reiterate the competency and quality of the program Avast that you endorsed in the same episode. It is an extremely apt and capable antivirus software. Well, I'm glad you think so, Clayton, because I happen to like that one as well. Of course, last month I did give a passing mention to Avast Antivirus, which is, for the most part anyway, it's a free program, and it seems to do a very good job. I'm quite happy with it. Of course, that's when I'm on Windows. When I'm not on Windows, I don't really have to worry about it as much. Clayton continues, further, I would like to echo your sentiments on the stupid people who choose to call 1-900 numbers after returning the supposed missed call on their mobile phone. One must be particularly daft not to realise this phone scam, as it is only the mobile version of the landline scam that has been doing the rounds for a few years prior. I believe we need to clean up this scam-based society for the ill-informed youth and naive adults that carry mobile phones. Those people are susceptible to this scam. If yourself and your legions of listeners send in messages to Telstra, to Optus, to Senator Helen Coonan containing a voice of complaint and the offending number, with your support, this endeavour could very well be achieved. Well, thank you, Clayton, for that. It's, certainly an interesting suggestion. I wonder, would it really stop the missed call scam? I mean, it's so easy for those companies to just do that that I have to wonder if it really would make any difference whatsoever. But, well, maybe it would. I mean, it's already illegal, the mass dialing that they're doing, so perhaps it would help. But whether it would or not, I mean, who really knows? Harry sends in an email referring to last month's thought for the month. I might just replay that for you. Alrighty then, time for a thought for the month. Why is it that a surplus is a surplus, but a deficit is not a surminus? So Harry has some feedback for us about that. It's interesting. Harry writes, Hi Samuel, a surplus is a surplus, but a deficit is a surnegative, which doesn't roll off the tongue as easily as deficit. The reason it is a surnegative is that we refer to numbers below zero as negative numbers, not minus numbers. But now that I think about it, perhaps a surplus should be a surpositive. I give up. Harry. Well, thank you for that, Harry. I think we all give up. Does it really matter? I mean, they might be negative numbers, but we rarely ever, I mean, I suppose actually it depends on how you were brought up as to whether you refer to it as a negative one or a minus one. I don't think it really matters. We all know what we mean, I hope. I know I do. Ice Block, or at least someone referring to themselves as Ice Block, has sent in some audio feedback. Let's have a listen.
Yo, F-Money, the Pussy Flash is the bomb, word.
Yes, all right, thanks for that. That's probably one of the reasons why Talk Radio has producers to screen the calls, so they don't end up with that. And continuing on from that one, we have some very strange feedback from someone calling themselves Neat Eye. I don't know whether we should read this out or not. Call out Garanga be happy. Garanga, Garanga, Garanga. That which brings the highest happiness. What on earth are you going on about, Neat Eye? I don't know why. Why did I even bother to print that one out and read them? I don't know. If you've got some sensible feedback, you can send it to podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com. Or spoken feedback to the same address, or click on the send spoken feedback link. Send spoken feedback link on the Samuel's Persiflage website. It's, I don't know why I got all of this strange feedback this month. Some of it was good. Maybe we can get some more of the good feedback next month. That would be great. recently, Bill Grady from the You Are the Guest podcast interviewed me, and the interview formed the 52nd episode of You Are the Guest. Thought I might share some highlights of that with you now.
Welcome to You Are the Guest, a weekly show where you can be the guest and tell people what you and your friends and neighbors think about news events and issues of the day.
Greetings from the great city of Fort Dodge, Iowa, and welcome to show number 52 of You Are the Guest, the show where we talk to everyday people just like you and me about their lives and about the issues of the day. Today, our guest comes all the way from Australia. Samuel, welcome to You Are the Guest.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Why do you feel that people need to blog?
I think there are just some people who have information that they want to share with the world, whether it be completely trivial information about what they did that day, to whether it might be something of some significance, such as, I know I'm currently following the progress of some of the constructions around Canberra. But I just think some people like to share information with other people, and blogging is a convenient way to do it.
See if you agree with this statement. Is it true that there are such things as forum bullies?
Yes.
And could you give me an example?
There are people there who, I don't know why, but they have this notion that whatever they're doing is obviously something that they should be doing and that everyone else in the world agrees with them. And anyone who doesn't agree with them or has a slightly different way of blogging to them or a slightly different way of expressing themselves is just a person they can target and target consistently.
And one of the things that amazes me, especially with local and state government, is that when you meet some of these politicians in person, you walk away asking yourself, why were they considered the best person for the job? Was there nobody else to take their position? Do you find that the same in Australia?
Oh, absolutely.
Samuel, it's time to play Ask Bill 3. This is where I'm going to turn the microphone over to you, and you get to ask me 3 questions about anything.
What's the weirdest dream that you've had that you can remember?
My mom and my dad were together in their house, and they were remodeling their house. But as they were remodeling their house, they built the sidewalk that comes in front of the yard to go through the middle of their house. So in other words, the neighbors, when they would walk their dog or whatever, instead of going past the front of the house, would have to go right through the middle of the house. So instead of doorways, they just had this big hallway. And neighbors were going right, you know, through the middle of their house. And, you know, people would sometimes take their shoes off, you know, so they wouldn't get the carpet dirty. But, I'm going in this dream, I'm going, Dad, what are you doing? Why would you put the sidewalk through the middle of the house? Why wouldn't you put the sidewalk in the front of the house so people don't have to walk through the house? And, of course, you know, they didn't see anything wrong with that in the dream. Samuel, thank you so much for being our guest this week on You're the Guest.
It's my pleasure, Bill. Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to be a guest on a future show, just go to our website at www.youaretheguest.com. Submit your first name, the town where you live, and a short description on why you'd make a good guest. There is no charge for being a guest, and you'll have the opportunity to share what you think and how the news and events from today affect your life. The show's producers will contact you by email if you're chosen for a future show.
So certainly go to youaretheguest.com. There'll be a link in the show notes, of course, if you'd like to have a listen to the full episode there. I actually found that interview to be quite interesting. We touched on a few other topics as well. So worth a listen if you've got some time. I certainly enjoyed the interview. Anyway, it's time to have another look at the persiflage puzzle, and this time around we might have, we might pull 5 letters out of the hat and see if that gets us anywhere. Let's start with the letter X for X-ray. Well, that's not in the puzzle, not surprised. It's not in many of them. One of these days we'll have to put it in there. Just on purpose, I'll make a puzzle which has the letter X, and then I'll just have to hope I pull it out of the hat, because if I don't, it'd be a bit of a waste of time, wouldn't it? Next letter out is the letter N for Nathan, and that happens to be the fifth letter of the first word, and the eighth letter of the second word. Next letter out is the letter T for Tom, which is the third letter of the first word, as well as the sixth letter of the first word. Gee, that word's certainly coming along, isn't it? Alright, let's have another letter now, and it's the letter A for Apple. It's another letter in the first word. It's the eighth letter of the first word. Well, that word's starting to look very obvious now, isn't it? And let's pull out another letter now. It's the letter P for Peter. I don't believe it. It's another letter in the first word. It's the first letter of the first word. Well, if you can't work out what that letter is, that word is, then I don't know where you are. But certainly that's the first letter of the first word, so that word's incredibly obvious now. And as I said, this is a very important measurement, possibly one of the most important. So, I think you might be able to work this one out. You might have given this one away. We'll see how you go. Good luck with that. We'll have the answer just a little bit later on. It's time for the thought for the month, and, well, this one's not as concise as they usually are. Usually all of these thoughts of the month are very quick and concise, and so far they all seem to have been a bit of a play on words, but this month it's not. This one is a bit longer, and, well, recently something has been on my mind for quite a few times this month, actually, is how subjective temperatures are. Because, I mean, temperatures, we have some temperatures that we regard as being hot and other temperatures we regard as being cold. But in reality, it's all very subjective. I mean, I'm often in contact with people in other parts of the country and sometimes even overseas and, well, I'll give you an example. In Queensland, if it got down to 2 degrees, most people would be very, very cold. Whereas here, we probably still regard 2 degrees as being a bit nippy and a bit cold, but I personally find 2 degrees to be, well, not too bad at all. I mean, in winter anyway, it's very easy for me to get off the bus when it's 2 degrees and the sun's shining and you think, gee, it's nice and warm today. And then, of course, I have a look at the Bureau of Meteorology's website, and it's 2 degrees. And I think, okay, maybe it's not as warm as I thought, but it felt lovely. How can 2 degrees feel lovely and warm to someone in one part of the country, and yet somewhere else they'd feel like they were being frozen? I suppose it's all very subjective. We adapt to various temperatures very easily, and I suppose, in fairness, if it was summer and it got down to 2 degrees, then yes, I'd be very, very cold. And also in winter, I'm probably wearing thicker and more clothing. So, ultimately, I'm going to be warmer regardless of what the temperature is than if it was summer and I was wearing less clothing. It would be, I'd be just a little bit colder. And so it's something that intrigues me, how temperatures to one person, a certain temperature can be very hot or very cold, and yet to another person it can be just right. It's temperature and the weather, it's a very interesting subject. We'll be right back. Well, I thought it might be worthwhile mentioning that David Young, the host of the 2CC Gardening Show for about the last 10 years and then the host of the ABC local radio gardening show for about 12 years before that, and indeed the gardening correspondent for 10 Capital News when it was on here in Canberra, he's retired. I thought I might mention that because, well, it was David who was the inspiration for the persiflage puzzle. Had a segment on his 2CC show called The Thing. Well, not really a segment, just something that kept going right throughout the show. At the beginning of the show, he'd give out, well, much like I do with the persiflage puzzle, he'd say how many words were there and how many letters were in each word, and then throughout the show, each caller would give him a letter and he'd tell them where those letters were in the puzzle, and eventually someone would ring up and know what the puzzle's answer was and they'd win a prize. Pretty simple, but effective, and good bit of fun, and even kept those of us who might not have been overly excited by the gardening side of things, just kept us a bit interested as well. When I would listen, I would get out a pen and paper and follow the puzzle and see if I could work it out before it was announced. Always a bit of fun, but thought I might mention that David has retired, and I know that a number of people in Canberra will miss him because he's been, he's been such a regular part of people's lives here for quite a while. And I know I'll miss him. I'll miss waking up to him on a Saturday and Sunday morning. It's always a pleasure to hear his very relaxed voice on the radio on the weekend. So I'll certainly miss that. Of course, the current persiflage puzzle, I did mention that it's a very important measurement, and I think it's one that David probably would have mentioned quite a few times on his gardening show. I think he would have, because it's one of those measurements that probably does come up a fair bit in gardening. I think I've just given you another clue. I don't know whether I should have done that. I've probably just given it away completely now, but... Well, we'll see how you go. David, I was hoping to interview him in this episode, but, well, I don't know where he is, so it didn't quite happen. But, David, if you're listening, drop me a line. I'd like to interview you at some stage. Podcast at samuelgordonstewart.com is the email address, as you would probably know. But, yeah, if you are listening, then do send me an email, because I would like to interview you on a future episode. I do hope you enjoy your retirement, David. I know that a number of people in Canberra hope that you enjoy your retirement. Yeah, there's that music again. Must mean it's time for me to go. Which indeed it does, because it is time for me to go. Well, did you get the persiflage puzzle? It was potential hydrogen level. I thought that gardening clue might give it away, actually. Potential hydrogen level is often abbreviated to pH level. And as I did say, it's a very important measurement in gardening and also in ponds and various other things like that. It's one of the most important measurements we have, in fact. So maybe you got that, maybe you didn't. I hope you did. I hope it wasn't too hard, but actually I think it was probably a bit too easy. But when those letters come out of the hat, well, I have to take them, don't I? Alright, well, that's the episode for this month. I hope you enjoyed it. Of course, you can send feedback to podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com or on the Samuel's Persiflage website, click on Send Audio Feedback. That should take you to the website where you can record some audio feedback. Well, I hope I can hear from you, and hope you enjoyed the episode. Well, hopefully I'll see you next month for another episode of Samuel's Persiflage. Until then, have a good month. Ta-da!